Let's bring in Shai Davidi, our MLB insider at Sportsnet. Shai, I just reported to the world that Giancarlo Stanton will be with the Blue Jays, and that the deal could be done in a matter of weeks. What do you think of that? Shai?
That's the appropriate response.
Sorry, I just caught the tail end of that.
Oh, just that
could be done in a couple of weeks.
Giancarlo Stanton will be with the Jays in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
I mean, look, it's the start of the off. It might as well go big, right? You might as well go big. It's not happening. I'm having fun with everybody. But I wanted to start the off season, with a bang, you know? And
that would be a bang.
That would be a bang. It's not happening.
It would be, you know, I've kicked that one around a little bit.
Oh, Shai, I was just, don't add any legitimacy to it because you'll drive people nuts.
Go ahead, Shai.
No, I wasn't going to add legitimacy to it. I was just going to kind of play out the process. Like, if you look at it, you know, in theory, it could be, it's interesting for the first couple of years, but the back end of that contract are a total horror show.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, what would a payroll have to be to sustain or handle the back end of that contract? I don't even know if a team like the Dodgers could swallow that and still build around him. You'd have to have like him and then just, you know, 10 or 15 great kids to have any sort of realistic sort of shot at contention on the back end of the contract.
Well, see, we were talking about this a little bit yesterday, Shai. Like, you know, everybody said, well, of course you'd want Giancarlo Stanton. But if you actually kind of look at the potential trade partners, again, unless Miami is willing to eat money, which kind of, you know, defeats the purpose because they're trying to get rid of money. I'm not sure there's any great – number one, I think the list is really short of potential trade partners. And I'm not sure there's any great bonanza for them there. Like, that's
right. Well, they're going to have to eat money, right?
Yeah.
Because any team in baseball could have had them for free the past couple of waiver periods.
Yeah.
And nobody bid. So in order for Miami to get rid of them, they're eating some amount of money. Now, the ratio becomes how much money are you eating in relation to quality of prospect you're getting in return, right? And you'd have to eat a lot of money to get back anything that might be palatable to your big league team at some point.
Exactly. So, you know, it's not it's you know, again, I just think it's a short list of teams.
Lord, guys, yeah. I was just having fun with people.
No, but we're not talking about the Jays. We're not talking about the Jays. We're talking about where he's going to go somewhere, right?
All right.
Now, D. Gordon, that's a more interesting discussion in relation to the Jays.
Can I just tee this up a little bit?
No.
Yes.
Everybody knows what we're talking about.
Okay, all right.
You don't need to do that. They know what the show is. They know where we are. They know who Shai is. It's fine.
Okay, all right. I won't tee it up.
You know, I know in radio school they teach you to do tee-ups.
Oh, yeah. Like, and I went to radio school. Yeah. The first thing they did at radio school is remove my voice. So much for that.
D. Gordon, yes or no?
Maybe.
Yeah.
You know, I think they'd like to... Ideally, they want to find someone who could play multiple positions, who could play shortstop and second base and perhaps another spot in the outfield. An Eduardo Nunez type is more of the fit, although I think he's going to get overpaid in free agency unless that knee injury he suffered in the postseason was really bad. But I think that's more the mold they're going to look. But D. Gordon's an interesting sort of fallback. You know, He's enough of an offensive contributor that he certainly helps. He's expensive for what he is. So maybe you're not giving up anything if you're just taking the money. But I think ultimately you probably want to do a little bit better than him.
I wanted to point out, by the way, that Shai has submitted his Blue Jays offseason, the winter primer. And I believe that's going up on the website at some point.
Yeah,
soon.
It should be in the next little bit.
As you point out, I want to close the door on the World Series a little bit because we haven't had a chance to talk to you about it. I mentioned you've got the two best teams in baseball playing seven games, so it's pretty much, I think, what just about everybody would want. The Astros winning game seven. Probably not the outcome that I thought. I thought going to game seven, LA would probably would be in a better position to win that. But I wanted to ask you, are there any sort of broad takeaways for Blue Jays fans and the Blue Jays, Shai, from what we've seen from these two teams in the World Series? In other words, any lessons and any templates maybe or partial templates that we should, you know, that we might be able to hook onto as a result of the Astros and the Dodgers?
Well, I think there are a couple of interesting things. And, you know, one of them isn't much of a surprise, and it's a repeat of what we've seen in the past few World Series, but young and athletic wins in large measure, right? I mean, you just look at both the Astros and the Dodgers, and to a degree, the teams they beat previously in the postseason, and they're just filled with young and athletic players who are multidimensional, and not the, you know, grip it and rip it incarnation of the Blue Jays that they've had the past couple of years, especially last year when it was really a station-to-station team, and that was one of the big issues on offense. So I think that's one thing that you pull from and recognize, but it shouldn't come much of a surprise. Two, you know, the usage of pitching in the postseason continues to evolve, and I think, again, this is a continuation of what we've seen the past couple of years, but it was even more extreme to me this year in the way that teams brought back starters in subsequent games in the World Series. And having that depth of pitching is going to be crucial for any team that wants to succeed in the postseason, because more and more managers are trying to go to their best guys more and more often, which of course makes sense, but it only adds to the demand. So how teams can manage a workload earlier in the season to try and keep those guys a little bit fresher for October and maybe a day or two in November, I think is going to be something teams are going to be thinking about this winter and next spring as they begin mapping out how they're going to attack 162 games and potentially the playoffs.
You know, you're right. You're right about athleticism in the game and use in the game. But it's funny, you know, Shai, you look at that World Series. It was dominated by home runs. There was, what, 2 stolen bases in the whole World Series, and there's a lot of crappy defense played. You know, it kind of, you know, in some, like, and I think the power part of the game in, you know, in baseball at this moment in the 21st century, whether it's because of, you know, juice baseballs or whatever, but that, you know, that's still also going to be part of the, you know, the kind of dominant theme as we head into 2018 is, you know, there's a whole lot of guys hitting 15, 20 home runs, never mind the guys who are hitting 50-plus home runs.
Right.
That seems to be just the truth in baseball. So, you know, you can try and play other ways, and it's good to be able to do other things, but it's a power game now too, isn't it?
It is. 100%. It's a power game. But I also think, you know, you look at situations, look at the way the Astros created that first inning. You know, they have, you know, Springer can run, and he's putting pressure on the defense, and Altuve can run, and there's just that ability that where the guys are coming at you so fast, you have to make plays quick. Mm-hmm. It maybe costs you an extra step here and there, and then having that in your mind as a pitcher, it adds another element. It's like, yeah, you're worried about the home run, but you also know that, you know, a guy gets on first base, you know, a ball just slightly into the gap could score him too. And so it's just having the multiple threats, I think, is what makes a big difference. And the teams that are thinner in that regard, you know, and I put the Yankees in that category. They're mostly relying on the home run compared to, say, a team like the Astros that can do a few more things. You know, there's a bit of a difference there, and you need to have that extra element when the home run doesn't come. Because even the Dodgers, think about the Dodgers last night. You know, was it 1-for-13 with runners in scoring position? You know, that killed them. They didn't get the big blow, but they also weren't able to kind of create a run or two here and there, and maybe make that a bit more of a close game, and put a bit more pressure on that Houston pitching staff.
Shai, as we look at the Blue Jays winter ahead, as you point out, the organization has already had meetings. Ben Cherington, Tony LaCava, Eric Wedge, John Alon, Jim Scallon, Ross Atkins. We're in town Monday and Tuesday. Boy, they don't. It's like anything else. There's not a lot of time to waste, right? You've got general managers meetings, and then winter meetings. What's the first order of business, you know, for the Blue Jays? There's some paper stuff, as you point out. They've got to put who is it? They've got to put Tulowitzki, Travis Sanchez, and Pompey. They have to account for them on the 40-man roster Monday, correct? If they want to retain them.
That's right. So it's 5 days after the World Series. Right. Anybody on the 60-man has to be reinstated. And the Blue Jays will be fine there, because once their free agents come off the 40-man roster, I believe they're going to have 35 spots open.
Okay.
So that'll be fine, but the crunch is going to come a bit later, mm-hmm. when they have to start adding some of their prospects that they need to be placed on the 40-man roster or exposed in the Rule 5 draft need to be added, and they start making other player transactions via waiver, free agency, trade, whatever the case may be.
And we're talking about, just to tell people, we're talking about Rowdy Tellez, Max Pentecost, Danny Jansen, Reese McGuire, Connor Green, Tom Pannone, and Jordan Romano and Francisco Rios.
Right. So, I mean, those are guys that they don't want to risk, certainly losing in the Rule 5 draft. That's where some of the surplus is going to be for them, as well. They'll have some surplus in the bullpen, and they're going to have to start trying to figure out how they attack things from there. So
they might have to roll the dice on a couple of those guys, won't they, Shai, just because of numbers?
And, for sure.
And because, and I know people listening to this probably know, but, obviously with Rule 5, it's not just the team can grab somebody. They have to keep them on the roster for the whole year or offer them back. So, it's an interesting calculation, right, whether you say – like, let's take Connor Green as an example, a guy who, was highly valued by the previous administration, a guy who throws 100 miles an hour but hasn't necessarily stalled out a little bit at Double-A. Would a team carry him, want to carry him for an entire season? Could you dangle him out there and not worry about it? Max Pentecost, a guy who's had a really good fall league and looks like he's healthy. A catcher who can hit, a guy who was an 11th overall pick, you're probably not going to dangle him, but even him, would a team carry him for a year? It's an interesting calculation to make, if you've got guys who are, they're attractive, but maybe not quite major league ready.
Sure, but I think by just by the fact of the sheer number of guys that are up for there and how many 40-man roster spots are already taken, they're going to have to dangle a few of them. So they're going to have to take pretty educated guesses on which guy is likely to get through. Connor Green, I think, is a guy who gets plucked for sure, because he throws 100. You can stick him in a bullpen and say, we're going to make this guy a reliever. We're not going to wait and see if he figures out his breaking ball and can end up turning over a lineup two or three times.
Why don't these guys do that?
I think they just want to exhaust the option of him as a starter. And, they continually see just enough progress with the curveball to say, it might just be around the corner. It might just be around the corner. Whereas, you want to, because it's so intriguing, because he can maintain high 90s, 100 into for six or seven innings, you want to make sure that you're not giving up on that too early. And it should be, if they do have to give up on it, it should be a pretty quick transition because, you just figure out a slider, you come into the bullpen 100 with a slider, that's going to play. Yeah. So I think that's why they keep exhausting it.
I think they're going to deal him. Shai, I think they're going to try and get some value from him. I'm not sure that they're convinced by him, but I think they'll try and keep him around and try and get some value, whether that's possible or not. I don't know. They may not want to expose him anymore, is I guess what I'm saying. He's a bit of a conundrum for him because I know in spring training last year he was a bit of a disappointment to them. So,
right. And I think the thing that everybody keeps scratching on their heads around is that why is this guy who throws 100, why is there so much contact off him?
Yeah.
You'd expect there to be a lot more swing and miss. And that's the riddle. And I think part of the theory is that if he had more consistency with a secondary pitch, then at that point, guys can't sit dead red. But you're right. I mean, how much patience do you have for that?
Yeah. I may be reading something too much into this, but I sensed listening to or reading Ross Atkins quotes, maybe listening to Ross a little bit over the last little while, just a little bit of the softening of the rhetoric around Vladdy Jr. and whether he could play here in 2018. Because the organizational position was no way, no how. We don't do that. We don't go north with six rookies. That's not how we operate. We're not, we don't rush. We got to develop guys. But it seemed to me, I just felt a little bit of a waiver in what he'd said about him lately. Now, the scenario that he, and maybe it's because, he just went down to the Winter League in Dominican, played really well there against men. But, the scenario that gets him, he's got to have a position to play. And, again, it's the scenario that gets him here is a midseason trade of Josh Donaldson for a non-contending team. Which is probably, so that's not a good reason to bring him up or not a good scenario. But I just wonder if, for baseball reasons or maybe, you hate to think about other reasons, like keeping people excited about whether they might waver on that a little bit or he might force their hand a little bit.
Well, I'd say I agree with you first off, and that there has been a softening in the discussion, and you know, both quietly and publicly. You know, I started sensing a little bit of a change. I would say probably late August, mm-hmm. where you know there was murmurs or like, you know, it might just be possible sooner than you think. And I think that's just because of how advanced he's become as a hitter. That you know, if he has another season of progress last year or next year, like he did this year, then you know it's going to be a tough call for them, a very intriguing one. And you know, as much as you know, you think they're committed to him at third base too, I wonder that if the Jays aren't, say, in an interesting position, and they're doing well next year, that maybe he ends up in left field or something like that, and comes up midseason as a boost, sort of the way the Red Sox added Devers this year. You know, he was up at third base as a natural position, but you know, I think Guerrero came to the organization as an outfielder. I don't think it would necessarily take that much work for him, and the bat is so special that you know you can certainly create a bit of room for him at a position where you know defense is often secondary to the offensive production. So I think that's a scenario that's probably more on the table than it would have been even a few months
ago. Is it on the table in spring training though, Shai? Because you know that would be a leap, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I can't see. That would be trying to jump over a chasm, and I just can't see that happening.
Two situations that I think are particularly interesting to people. Two situations, frankly, that are probably going to have to be managed this year. One is Josh Donaldson. The other is Aaron Sanchez. And I've got a couple of different questions here. We'll start with Aaron first. What's the fallback, Shai? If the blisters do turn into something that recur again, is there a fallback for the Blue Jays?
I think the fallback is going to be added at some point during this offseason. Because I don't think it can just be, all right, we got Joe Biagini as our five and we're good, right? Or Ryan Barucki is going to come and continue the rapid ascent and he's going to be the guy. He can be our six if Biagini is our five. You know, I think that leaves them exposed in a way that they were this year. And, you know, the lesson among many from this past season is make sure you have enough starting pitching depth and don't count on everyone to be healthy and everything to go to plan. So I would expect, in one part for there to be at least some sort of swing arm, if not another starter added. So Biagini can be either in your bullpen or your six at Buffalo. And then I guess, you know, the other potential fallback is at some point if starting is going to be too much of a burden on Sanchez, you know, do you start looking at him as a reliever? I don't think we're there yet, but, you know, I wonder if it's another half a season or more of dealing with the blisters, does that start becoming a bit more of a conversation that with some possibilities?
Are they, you know, Brett Anderson, you know, was interesting while he was here last year, it was you know, by and large good. There's, you know, he's not an old guy. He's a very experienced guy. Do you know how they kind of parted ways there? Do they have interest in him for next year?
I think there's some interest. The price point is going to be pretty pivotal there, because there's just so much risk of volatility, right? So how much are you guaranteeing to a guy who could give you anywhere from 5 to 20 starts, mm-hmm. you know? So that's where the challenge of a Brett Anderson comes in. And, you know, when you bring him in on a minor league contract in the middle of the season, it's different as opposed to, okay, well, we're going to make some sort of commitment to you, and we still can't be certain what we're going to get from you. So, you know, to me, the price point is the tipping point there. And if it's not much of a commitment, then I think there's a conversation there. But if it's a more substantial commitment, I think the Blue Jays look for something with a bit more certainty.
So we talked a little bit, just mentioned Josh Donaldson. I think we're probably all three of us are on board. He starts the season with the team, and then we go from there. And if the team's still in it, Josh Donaldson finishes the season with the team. If they are somehow out of it around the trade deadline, I think, quite frankly, the team looks at trading him. I think all three of us are in agreement there, are we? But the question I would like to ask is, do you see the Jays having do you see them having off-season contract discussions with Josh about a, you know, a 4 or 5 year deal this off-season, or do you think they'll just go that 1 year and, you know, sort of operate under the same assumption we're operating under?
Well, I'm not sure where you're on this, Stephen, but you know, my expectation is that there's a natural window for them to have that discussion right around the time when they start getting into the arbitration, into the arbitration talks. You know, at that point, you know, they have an opportunity to explore what a longer term deal might look like, what the expectations from either side would be. And my guess is that they would have some talks. They probably won't align in terms of what each of them wants to see. They agree on some sort of one-year deal and then head into the market from there.
Yeah, well, if Josh Donaldson wants to max out, he and his agent, then that's not going to happen. Like, they're going to go to market. And most players do, right? Most players who have that opportunity once in their career.
That needs to be said. Most players do go to free agency.
You know, however much they love the town and the team and whatever, they go to market. And, I think it's unlikely that those discussions would bear fruit. And then I also think it's unlikely that you deal them in the off season. I think, you know, the way 2018 lines up, I think you want Josh Donaldson in your starting lineup on opening day, and you're taking a shot at winning. And if you're out of it at the deadline, it's harder to be out of it with 2 wild cards. But if you're out of it at the deadline, then the incremental difference between what you would get for him in the offseason versus what you would get for him at the deadline, to me, would not justify essentially giving up on the season.
Let me ask you this, though. Let me ask both of you guys this. If the Jays are at the next trade deadline where they were at this trade deadline, what do you do?
That's tough. Yeah.
Because, you know, kind of 1 foot in, 1 foot out. Then what do you do?
Yeah, with a full stadium?
With a full stadium. Then what do you do?
Yeah, I don't know. Shy, what do you do? You can have that one.
Nice. I would say this. If it's looking like if they played the way that they did this year and you just get the sense that it's not going to come together. You're still sort of waiting for the best of the team to emerge, but it's just not coming. Then I think you have to make the trades. Whereas, you know, if you're playing well and, you know, you're still maybe a few games back, but, you know, your team's playing well and, you know, there may be a bit more, you're going to get a boost in some way, shape, or form, then I think at that point it's worth it to you to play it out. At the same time, you probably also explore what the return is. Right, and if the return is too good to pass up, then you have to look at it. But you also have to remember that, you know, the challenge in dealing a player like Josh Donaldson at the deadline is that not everyone's going to need a third baseman.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a good
right?
point.
So you're going to have a team that can not only needs a third baseman, but can also take on a good portion of a contract that's probably going to be, you know, in excess of $20 million next year. So there are a lot of factors at play that don't make it such a slam dunk, and that you'd have to be totally out of it without any hope to really want to make that trade at that point.
Now, Shai, again, this is not a road we would go down. You know, we'll go down this road if we have to at some point. But you know, you look ahead at this season and think, if you know, in a worst case scenario, which would involve them falling out of contention in the first 2 or 3 months of the season, or having just stubbing a toe really badly in the first 2 or 3 months, is John Gibbons vulnerable?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, I think the way that the contract is structured, I mean, he's going to go into his last year of a deal, the last guaranteed year. He and the rest of the coaches have an option, but, you know, that's a card for the Blue Jays to play at some point. And, you know, as much as that relationship with the new front office has worked, probably better than a lot of us expected it to, you know, ultimately, at some point, they're going to want their own guy in here. And, you know, I don't think that they're waiting or looking for a reason to fire John Gibbons. But from a realistic standpoint, you know, you can look at where the contracts are and you look at the reality of how much turnover there's been in the organization. You know, at some point, that's going to be on the table. And if things aren't going well next year, you know, that's a card that they can play to try and get the team to turn a corner before they have to blow it up.
Shai, we're going to let you run first of many conversations, I'm sure this off season. You're going to enjoy those. You're going to enjoy that Winter Olympic break, though. It's going to keep you sane.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. But most of the business will be done by then. So
that's true.
We'll enjoy the fun and games, and then enjoy the Olympic games.
Thanks a lot, Shai. I appreciate this. And thanks for your availability, your work, and your cooperation all year. It's been great, as always.
My pleasure. Have a good one, guys.